Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. And I have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you.
And on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hey, everyone. And listeners, thanks for tuning in.
We are going to talk about some interesting things today, and I want to start off by talking about Salt Lake City. And, you know, it's our capital city. It's a home to many. It's our largest city. It's also, Shireen, what some of are calling the new Salt Lake. There's a lot of things that go into that. I've got my list. John, you might have some things. But, you know, like we're an Olympic bid city.
Yeah.
2030, 2034 will be one of them.
We supposedly have bounced back better from COVID than any other larger mid-sized city.
Yeah. And that's data from, a Toronto university that looked at mobile devices before the pandemic and after, and the growth rates in Salt Lake City far exceeding everyone else. A doubling of the downtown population the next few years. You can see it in the construction that's going on. I got more, but Shireen, you're a Salt Laker, so meaning you live in the city proper.
Correct. Yeah.
How do you react to this? What's the vibe you're seeing?
Well, today I have
She's excited.
I know this is an audio medium, but I did wear in my heavy metal shop shirt. So when I was thinking about it when I came down here, because this is an institution. The heavy metal shop opened almost 35 years ago in Salt Lake City. For 22 years, it's been in this little space on Exchange Place, kind of right off of 4th South, right downtown. And they received news that there would be kind of renovations happening. The rent was increasing. And I think the rent increasing is maybe the part that really stood out to me. And it seems like that's something that's certainly happening for businesses, for renters all over. But I just wanted to give a shout out to them.
Tell us about them.
Yeah,
I've never heard of this shop before.
So this is a small shop, and it really does focus on heavy metal music, but they also make these great shirts that you kind of see around town, one of which I'm wearing. Maybe we'll see if we could throw it up on social. And it was started by Angie and Kevin Kirk. And then in 2022, Angie passed away really suddenly. And so Kevin's been continuing the store and then received notice that, you know, they wouldn't be able to stay in this location. And I was so happy to hear that just this last week, they found a new home and they've reopened on 900 South and like 156th East. So just a little bit off of downtown. But actually, I would say this is part of what I think is also changing as a Salt Laker. I think down to that 9th South district is downtown. I think that's all downtown.
Broader.
And we used to kind of think about it as 4th South was the cutoff,
sure.
You know? So, so many dynamics have changed in the city. There's, I hear a lot about the road construction. I know there's a lot of frustration around that. But for me, the increased protections and infrastructure for bikers is really phenomenal. The way that those areas are being used to address things like thinking proactively around heat and extreme heat, the more trees that we can have in our urban environment, the way that those are strategically, you know, planted and placed along heavy corridors of concrete can do a lot to help cool a city. There are just so many exciting things happening, even though I think we're in a real moment of growing pains right now.
Yeah. John, do you buy?
I want to see Shireen, little Shireen Appleseed, going planting those trees along the way.
Do you buy, John, that a vibrant, prosperous, energetic, dynamic capital city is important to the economy of the entire region?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's Salt Lake here, whether it's Provo and Orem down in Utah County or Ogden up north, when those cities are strong and vibrant, all the surrounding communities benefit, industry benefits, the people that live there and work there benefit.
Would you go so far as to say that the mayor of Salt Lake City is the mayor to the region?
When you call the region, what do you call the region?
Greater Salt Lake area. I think of economic regions, right? So I think of what's the commuter shed, what's the flow of commerce, all those sorts of things. But I've worked with a lot of Salt Lake City mayors, and that's what I always tell them, is that you're mayor to the region because Salt Lake City is far more important to the state than its population size.
I think when you look at Salt Lake Valley, people look more to the Salt Lake City mayor than, for example, Salt Lake County mayor or the mayors of the various other communities in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. Well, so let's break this down even a little bit further. If you buy what Shireen's saying, that there's a different vibe, that it feels different, that would say that we have to change.
She sells it so passionately.
But it would say that you have to respond to that, whether it's growth. I would say that there's a lot of new voices in the city. There's a lot of new people in the city.
Yeah.
And that means that you have to have a lot of willingness to listen and have an open mind about what their needs are. How do we serve all people? I'm going to call you, John, a social scientist. You know, you're in elected office, whatnot. What do you think it calls upon us to do when you've got a changing Salt Lake?
Well, I mean, you have to navigate the dynamics of those that want it to stay the way it was before,
yeah.
and understanding their concerns with the changes that take place. You got to recognize new folks coming in with new ideas. From my perspective, and different folks deal with this differently, I would rather have the government take a lighter touch and let people be free to figure out what's working for themselves rather than a heavier touch and we're going to plan and control this thing down to the nth degree.
Yeah. I'll bet, because you're a visitor, you come in from Utah County on the work days and other times, I'll bet the road construction is driving you nuts. Just a guess.
Well,
I'm pointing at John from our listeners.
Yes. So I've missed a lot of the road construction.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually when I go downtown I hit it. When I come up the back way and loop into the Capitol, I largely miss it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, there's a lot.
There's a lot.
And Mayor Mendenhall has been, you know, very honest to just say, hey, we're investing in our future. Be patient.
Yeah, that's right.
John, by extension, we have a new Utah. And I've been thinking a lot about this.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was the good old one we just celebrated.
In the Deseret News on it. We're about ready to go public with a monograph on this point. But the new Utah has a lot of features, but it's a mid-sized state. It's a state that's getting more of its growth from the outside than the inside. It's a state that's become—
That will surprise a lot of folks,
yeah,
I think.
For the last 2 years, you know, and we think it's going to continue. A multicultural state that's more diverse than Ohio. A state that is getting more expensive. We've added that to our list.
Yeah.
That's a real problem for us. And then also—
And that's the thing that a lot of people are struggling with.
Yeah. Yeah. That you—
The cost of housing.
You come from a high price area and you're like, whoa, it's worse here.
Yeah.
And then we've got an economy that just has done a super good job. So, John, your reaction to all that?
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of people that are going to struggle as a result of that. There's the growing pains that you alluded to. There are some that are going to struggle with housing and getting the size and the type of housing that they want. You're going to have
a lot of renters. I'll just say that there's going to be a lot more renting, less of the American dream or home ownership in our state.
And I was listening to something which was talking about a lot more folks looking to start with new homes because people aren't selling their used homes because of the good mortgages that they have and things like that. But you also have the dynamic. I'll pick, for example, down where I live, when you have a lot of folks, whether they're coming from California or other places like that, that may not be, you know, where I live, may not be LDS. You've got different ways to approach life, and you have to better understand how they see the world versus how you're maybe used to, used to living.
I'm seeing some interesting trends in that as a regular reader of the Utah Business newsletter, or I guess it comes out every morning. But just seeing the kinds of stories that they've been focusing in on has been really interesting to me. And a lot of it is really talking about the lack of infrastructure that we have for women in the workplace, mothers in particular in the workplace, and thinking about the lack of access to childcare that we have, or in some cases maybe some large institutions that have been slow, I think, on things like, you know, parental leave and really creating the infrastructure to support families, even though we say we're a very family-friendly state. In some regards, our business industry has been slow to respond to that. I think that has accelerated exponentially in the last 5 years and just kind of from my perspective. But I would guess you maybe have some data to back that up and thinking about what our workplaces are going to look like here and what kinds of expectations people have for supporting caregivers in the workplace.
Yeah. I tell people that what I've experienced, and I think the data bears this out, is that we hit a tipping point or an inflection point, both in the city and the state. I think they've moved together here. And it's new. It's different. And I liken it to, and now I'm a University of Utah person, but when we joined the Pac-12.
Why?
Sorry. When we joined the Pac-12, it was like a light switch. And I once asked the athletic director, you know, how do I explain that to people? And this was Chris Hill. And he said, Natalie, tell them, you know, we used to be in Laramie and Colorado Springs, and now we're in L.A. and San Francisco. And I thought that was a pretty interesting way to say it. So now if I think of a mid-sized state in the West, instead of Idaho and New Mexico, maybe even Nevada, we're more like Colorado and Washington. And it's a different league for us. So I think that's pretty exciting, pretty interesting. John, what does it call on—
Bigly.
John, what does it call on elected officials and leaders to do? Like, one thing I would say is that we need the corporate citizenship to step it up. Like, government doesn't respond to all these needs. And I'm particularly saying if you're in the tech sector, start investing in this place like the old economy has, because the old economy is sustaining us. I'm talking about financial services and insurance companies and car dealerships and things that, you know, been here for a long time. Mm-hmm. But tech companies got to start stepping up. That's one thing I would say.
Well, you asked about elected officials. Mm-hmm. I think what you're going to see is a clash. You're going to see those that are going to fight to say it needs to always stay the way it's been in the past. Mm-hmm. And they're going to fight for
that's
those
a recipe
of,
for and, failure.
Yeah. And you're going to have others that are going to say, well, we have to double down and we got to spend all this money on all these pet projects and all this other stuff that they're going to call infrastructure, whether or not it really is infrastructure. And they're going to go down that path. Mm-hmm. And what I wish is we'd be, like I said earlier, a lighter touch.
Mm-hmm. And he's in the people... productive middle here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome, John. He winked at me.
Yeah. I would say I feel like something I'm noticing among friends and people who are sort of in their kind of professional middle or prime, you know, I'm seeing people leaving mm-hmm. Utah. Mm-hmm. And I think people who've, you know, had benefited in some ways mm-hmm. from, you know, being able to get in and get a house when homes were affordable and have been able to have great job and work experiences are seeing some of the things that are happening in both the environmental and I think on the political front and are looking to spend their, you know, have their tax dollars go to states that are more closely aligned with yeah. the things that they believe.
Or cost. I had a brother that moved to Tennessee primarily because of cost.
Yeah, cost.
Well, I think that we've outlined the topics well. In our second segment, we'll talk about a little bit more about what this means and even put a little focus on crime. So stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gawkner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We've been talking about the new Salt Lake, the new Utah. Really, it's about change and growth and in a lot of ways, progress.
Yeah.
But it comes with some costs. It comes with trade-offs. And I thought it'd be fun if in this last segment we could just talk a little bit about some of the things that we are seeing around us that need attention. And top of my list would be homelessness.
Yeah.
And, John, maybe you can ask. I'm going to turn it over to you
sure,
for a minute.
Sure.
Ask me and Shireen what you're seeing and let us respond to your
well,
thoughts.
Because I mean,
we live in the county and where
yeah,
it's headquartered.
Yeah, well, as a visitor to Salt Lake City, I go around and in the past I've heard we've solved homelessness and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. it seems like every day I see more and more people. We're here at KCPW and there's lots of people around that are homeless.
So Library Square.
Library Square. And so, Shireen, tell me, what are the answers? Because it seems like we've been trying lots of different things. And from my perspective, nothing seems to be working.
Yeah. So I want to point to a couple of things. One, I think that statement you've made about there were these sort of declarations in the past that we solved homelessness. A lot of that came from an article that I think was in Mother Jones. And I want to say it was in like 2010.
Because I read that all the time.
Yeah. But it was widely circulated because people were really proud of what it said about what we were doing. And what we were doing then, and actually what we are also trying to do now, is to invest in wraparound services in a housing environment for individuals who have been unsheltered, unhoused.
What are wraparound services?
Yeah, so what we're talking about there is a place where people can go, they can live. They have often their own private space. So it is very much like an apartment, often very small. An example in our city is Palmer Court. Mm-hmm. So this is a space that used to be, I think, a hotel.
Yeah.
That's been converted into a homeless service, I guess, piece of the puzzle where there are caseworkers on site. There are people who are able to connect with workforce services. There are different health entities that are coming in and interacting in that space. And when we think about kind of the different levels of shelter, we think about crisis shelter, like I think a lot of people are still associating it with just the road home, though there are many service providers that are working in that space. And we have a number of services, youth homeless services. We've got our resource centers that are fairly new in Salt Lake City. And then we have things like the YWCA that's more like transitional housing. And so that's getting people who maybe slip into homelessness because of domestic violence, which actually happens at an alarming rate, in particular for women and children, into a place where they can have more supportive housing, subsidized rent, and then are working towards greater self-sufficiency and being able to, help put their lives back together, right, after an incident like that. So there are lots of different pieces of that. There's also the treatment side, where we're talking about getting people who are struggling with profound, mental anguish, mental illness in ways that I think you know, some people I know talk about finding it really scary, you know, interacting with individuals on the street who are really out of touch with reality and not knowing what to do, but then also feeling really, really scared. And I understand that feeling. And I just want to say that, you know, there are resources that you can call, and maybe we can drop a few in the show notes here, but we've got individuals who are experiencing extreme, you know, mental distress. And then we also have people who are struggling with addiction. And so we have a whole other realm of services where people are able to go into treatment if they're willing. But there are missing pieces of this. There are missing components. And sometimes they're missing because individuals are adverse to going into a particular kind of shelter. Sometimes they have pets or they have a background that makes it really difficult for them to live in a congregate environment with other lots of other people. Maybe it's their trauma or different things they've experienced. So it really requires lots of different kinds of interventions. And we're lucky to have partners, everything from, for example, the Other Side Academy to, you know, treatment beds that are run by the VOA. But we need more. And this is something that is not just happening in Salt Lake City. This is happening across the entire country in urban environments.
Natalie, what are your thoughts?
Oh, where do I start?
I mean, Wayne, this is such a simple issue. Just give me 30 seconds.
Well, Wayne Niederhauser is the, you know, person that Governor Cox appointed to be over homeless services for our state. He's amazing. I met with him recently. He told me to read the book, What Happened to You. I recommend it to our readers. I finished it. Oprah Winfrey is one of the authors of it, but she's having a dialogue with a physician, neuroscientist, and it basically switches your mind to, instead of saying, why don't you get a job, it's what happened to you. And you learn about people's backgrounds and the issues that have caused this. Shireen's made a lot of great points. These are our brothers and sisters. We start from that point. Second is, it is a state issue or a humanitarian issue. It's not a Salt Lake City issue. That's ridiculous to think of it that way, as if city boundaries are what created this.
Yeah. And also, when we think about where the resources are, that's where we sort of see the problem right?
Yeah. The homeless resource centers are absolutely working. There's just more to be done. And I think we have to draw a hard, bright line on the shelter-resistant population, and it's not acceptable and it's not humane to let them live under those conditions. And we've got to get them to help and get them to shelter.
Yeah.
And it does require more investment. And I think that's something that all of us have to wrestle with.
Well, I just really want to add, when you say that, you know, the resource centers are working, I believe that is true as well. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, many lessons learned in those environments, and true, like, gratitude and blessings to the people who work there.
Amen.
Every day
and
those
that.
Who seek shelter there, right? And I would just add, for me, the thing that we need more of is that deeply affordable housing step. Mm-hmm. Where people can also get care and resources. That's kind of back to the thing where we talked about wraparound services to help them in that journey to find safety and stability.
John, I give huge credit to the legislature for investing more money in this, in housing preservation and the like, but we need a lot more. And this is where I'm also saying that the philanthropic part of the state, and I don't just mean the ones that are always there, you know, year in and year out. Yes, they're there and we need it, but we need more people.
Yeah.
We need a broader mix of people giving to this.
I also want to add one more thing, because I think we've talked about it before, but I do the point in time count almost every year, which is an event that happens in January where people go out and we try to canvass all the individuals who are living unsheltered. And in that space, I just have to tell you, so many people are from here. They grew up in Layton. They grew up in West Jordan. They grew up in St. George.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we're fed this narrative that our homeless population is coming from out of state or coming from other places. It just, the data that we have and this, you know, individuals I've met in that practice year after year really suggests that this is a homegrown problem, and it's one that we're seeing again across the nation.
Well, I think one of the key things from my perspective is we look at this as if it's a acute issue right now and we can just deal with it and it'll be fixed tomorrow. And Natalie, you bring up the book, What Happened to You, mm-hmm. which causes me to think about what led to this situation. What were the events in one's childhood, in one's, you know, adulthood? Mm-hmm. You know, how did they get into drug addiction, or what kind of trauma did they go through, mm-hmm. or whatever else happened along the way? And from my perspective, we need to look further upstream to say, not just how do we help those today, but how do we help those in the future avoid getting in these situations, whether that is helping them in disadvantaged households or the trauma that they're dealing with in violence that might be in their household, or public schools that are failing them and are not well suited to their learning needs, you know, whether it might be dyslexia or ADHD or some other dynamic where it's not meeting them, and we've got dedicated teachers and yet systems that somehow just seem to pass kids along, which at some point all of a sudden they get off the rails and engage in activities that cause them long-term problems.
Right. You know, the book that I referenced talks a lot about brain science, and it's overwhelming chapter after chapter after chapter that it describes how important the first few months and years of life are.
Yeah. It's also the time—
As your brain is still developing.
When a child is most likely to be unhoused in our country is at infancy, at very early.
And one of the key things from my perspective is a bunch of this goes to what I call community. It's neighbors. It's it's folks in the community. It's you know, to a certain extent, I can see, you know, the government programs, but to a certain extent, we shouldn't be looking that the government's going to solve this thing. It's how do we, in our own communities, our own families, our own friend networks, how do we start helping these issues?
I'm glad that you think about it that way. I think about each individual that I see living unhoused on our streets as a systemic failure of our government. The way that this happens in our country is just different than we're seeing it in other places. Certainly there are places around the world where it is much more extreme and the poverty is much more present and the numbers are impossible to address. Those are also places that I think we're seeing deep government failure.
These are age-old questions, John. That's why I'm smiling. I sit there and
look at government failure all the time of going, there's this intention, it does something, and it just can't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, I we could talk
pivot
over there, but I want to talk a little bit about crime as well. I keep hearing stories of bad things happening, particularly in the downtown space. There's a connection to homelessness and whatnot. But this is one of the problems of becoming a more urban, a larger, a more complicated society is you have a criminal element that exists. John, it's a big voting point for Republicans.
Yeah. They've historically been viewed as strong on crime and other things like that. And one of the key things is how do we have safe communities? How do we punish those that are truly preying on other people? But how do we also try and remedy some of those issues? We don't, from my perspective, don't want to just incarcerate people for extended periods of time and just take them out the street. We should be looking to try and help turn them around to the greatest extent possible.
John, if you were, and I know Shireen will allow me to give you this time, but if you were governor, what would you be doing on these things? Because I, you know, it's easy for me to kind of think, oh, so-and-so should do this. But for me, I think of our governor a lot because it's a statewide elected official, essentially the CEO of the state, who the buck stops with the governor. If you were the governor, what would you be doing with, and I'm saying with New Utah, New Salt Lake, and then these challenges that we get, whether it's homelessness, whether it's crime, whether it's really expensive housing, what would you be doing?
Well, I think on the crime issue, you're bringing law enforcement together, and sometimes people don't want to question law enforcement, but I think you got to have a discussion about how do we be safer when it comes to law enforcement, and how do
and
we
you're meaning
be smarter
city,
about it?
City, county, state together.
Individuals.
Yeah, I like
but the
that.
Other dynamic is you got to focus not just on, hey, we had a blue ribbon panel and we talked about stuff, but actually what changes, what matters. Did things, if you didn't move the ball, if you didn't start fixing the problem and getting in that trajectory, then from my perspective, you failed. It's kind of like when you go back and talk about education. Okay, we can talk about all the things we want to do with education, but if you didn't actually improve the learning outcomes of kids in whatever metric you want to use, then at the end of the day, I think you failed. We need to help kids if that's what the purpose of education is. And so that's where it is. It's having a good discussion. It's pushing the envelope, but it's also making sure that you're making progress.
Well, I wouldn't say, what would you do, Natalie?
Well, I'm thinking, I'm with John a little bit here. I looked up on my phone here this Milton Friedman quote that I'm pretty fond of. He says, one of the greatest mistakes is to judge policies and programs by their intentions rather than their results.
Yeah. I always tell folks, look at the outcomes. Look through the good,
so
because
I'm
there's almost
there.
Always good intentions.
So, you know, I would be less ideological and I would be more data-driven. That would be consistent with my history. So, those are thoughts. Anything else you want to add, Shireen?
I just think when we're thinking about the issues of crime, it really goes back to me for the conversation we were just having around the issues of, you know, individuals who end up living on our streets. What is happening upstream? And what are the places that we can actually invest and create resources and safety nets and interventions, whether those are community grown or government funded? I'm, of course, in favor of government funded, that are doing meaningful work to address you know, the really troubling and just deeply destructive kinds of crime that happen in our community that we often aren't talking about, mm-hmm. right? When we're thinking about, you know, the way that drugs are, you know, made or trafficked across our community and the impacts, the spiral out impact that has on families. When we think about, I guess I would just say, like, I would love for us to stop thinking about things like who's smoking weed and what we're doing to address really big problems.
Well, I got an idea. Instead of talking about banning books,
yeah.
why don't we go into these Title I schools and provide some services to these kids?
I am with
traumatized.
Let's go, Natalie.
And John, you don't like that because you want parents to be more involved. But there's some places where the parents have already, you know, not done their job. And
those kids
and pushing
suffer.
Them away even more is not going to get them stepping up.
What would you do? These kids need a safe place.
Yeah.
One of the key things is, at the end of the day, it's like,
since
parents failed, we must step in as the government. We must do everything and keep them out. And we should look for ways to engage parents and help them be a better part rather than telling them, just go away.
Too much
of a problem.
Those programs that are investing in our children are an investment in this country and our future.
That's a wrap. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Garbani and John Dougal. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for your interest.